Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California prison officials frequently fail to enforce mask requirements for prison staff and inmates to stop the spread of coronavirus. That's according to a report issued just yesterday by the California Office of the Inspector General. As of this week, 76 incarcerated persons and 10 members of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation staff have died of COVID-19. And we're going to review the report. We're going to also discuss last week's state court order that San Quentin State Prison release or transfer half of its inmate population to combat the spread of the virus. And joining us, Julie Small, criminal justice and immigration reporter for KQED. And welcome, Julie.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Mark Levine, who joins us, assembly member for District 10, which covers Marin County and Southern Sonoma County. Assemblyman, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Michael.
And let me begin, Julie, if I may, with you. This Inspector General's report came about as a result of a request by House Speaker Anthony Rendon. What's in it, basically? Can you give us sort of the highlights, if you would?
Sure. Basically, the Inspector General looked very closely at, they'd heard a lot of complaints and I've heard a lot of complaints. Any reporter who's talked to an inmate in any of our prisons right now has heard this. They were hearing that guards and other staff at the prisons were not always wearing their masks or maintaining social distancing. And so they go into the prisons normally as a part of their monitoring work. And so they were able to confirm that that was happening at prisons all over the state. And then they also did an in-depth investigation where they went to five prisons, including San Quentin, and witnessed themselves, their own investigators, people not consistently applying the policy. And the other big takeaway was that they think that the reason why this happened and was so prevalent is because there was a lax enforcement of these rules. These are basic safety protocols, but out of 63,000 people who work for corrections, only 7 people have been referred for discipline or investigation because they failed to wear a mask or got too close to an inmate. And I should say too that inmates have been seen not wearing their masks as well.
And we also should say that there were literally hundreds of thousands of masks that were made available, right?
That's right. The inmates themselves made them through CalPIA, and they had over 300,000 inmate cloth masks that they distributed to staff and inmates throughout the prison system. And that's the other big finding was we've been hearing accusations along the way that from staff that they weren't getting adequate protective equipment or masks. The Inspector General said they did actually a pretty good job with that, but they just didn't follow through on their own orders and make sure that people were adhering to the rules.
And what about the effect of this, particularly since there was the CDCR actually received the ruling and they pretty much disagreed with it?
The ruling, on the report from the Inspector General, their response has been kind of muted, just basically saying we would take this seriously and we're going to continue monitoring our policies and adjusting them according to what's happening. But they did object to the ruling. I think what you're referring to is...
Yeah, I jumped ahead of myself here for a moment. I was thinking about the ruling,
okay.
the ruling on San Quentin, which I wanted to go to next, actually. But any sense of where this is going to head or what kind of consequences it's going to have?
Well,
I'm talking again about the IG report.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we will see more people written up or disciplined in some fashion for not following the rules. I think, hopefully people will take this more seriously. I should say, too, it's not the vast majority of staff that work inside CDCR are going to follow these rules. They want to be safe. They want to protect their families. They want to protect their coworkers. But there was this significant minority. They interviewed a thousand. They got surveys back from 1,000 people who worked at San Quentin. And of that 1,000, 30% of them had seen somebody, a coworker, an inmate, not wearing a mask and getting too close to someone else, not enforcing the social distancing.
And there's poor ventilation, extraordinary close living quarters, inadequate sense of, and inadequacy is the only word to use here, of making sure that there's some physical distance or following the protocols. All this comes down to Quentin and what's going on there and the order with respect to Quentin. And let's get up to date with you on that, Julie, if you could.
Right. So there were dozens of inmates at San Quentin who file habeas corpus petitions with the state court, saying, you know, we want to get out of here. We think our lives are in danger. One of them in particular was named Ivan von Steich. And he's 64 years old. He'd actually petitioned the court in May before the virus was actually at San Quentin. He was, you know, housed in a cell with another man who is 65, who eventually caught the virus, and prison officials kept them together. He said that his Eighth Amendment rights had been violated, and the appeals court agreed. And he said that prison officials had showed deliberate indifference to his welfare and inmates at San Quentin. And one of the reasons why they drew that conclusion was because there was actually, as many people know who've been following along what's been happening at San Quentin, you had UCSF medical experts and epidemiologists, and also people from Berkeley Amend that went into San Quentin as the outbreak was just beginning and made recommendations. And one of the fundamental recommendations they made was you need to get about half the people out of here so that inmates can have distance from each other, so they won't be breathing on each other in the same cell. And prison officials chose not to do that.
All this, of course, goes back to late May with the botched transfer of inmates from California Institution for Men in Chino. San Quentin is COVID-free now, but at the same time, they've got to do something, and the ongoing concerns are there. Let me actually bring the assemblyman into this. We all, along with Julie in this segment, we have Julie Small, criminal justice and immigration reporter for KQED. We have Mark Levine, assembly member for District 10, which covers Marin County and Southern Sonoma. And Assemblyman Levine has, spoken very strongly about San Quentin. And I want to get you on record here, Mark Levine, especially since in April you were talking about a site-specific plan to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And essentially, where did it go?
It's not as though we weren't aware that a pandemic was occurring around the globe and in California. All the warning signs were there. Public health officials, doctors, even advocates early in the pandemic cited concerns about our state prison system, which from the very beginning exhibited a leadership culture that was either unwilling or incapable of doing anything to protect their staff and the incarcerated people in their care from COVID-19. We called for a plan way ahead of time, both to protect the health of the people working and living in the prison, but also to protect against increasing rates of local hospitalization. Many prisons, including San Quentin, have lower levels of beds in hospitals nearby. And there was great concern about a prison outbreak of COVID-19, along with a community spread of the disease that we were unprepared for. And it took well over a month after COVID entered San Quentin with the botched Chino transfer before they decided to even plan for an alternate care site at the San Quentin State Prison facility so that it would not overwhelm local hospitals. They ended up shipping San Quentin people throughout the state because there were not enough beds even here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, your warnings came early on, and so did warnings from Matt Willis, who essentially is a public health officer, and talked about the fact that action really needed to be taken, and it wasn't. Where does culpability lie for this? I mean, the federal receiver, Clark Kelso's name has come up repeatedly as acting too quickly, particularly on Chino. And in fact, he called it a self-inflicted wound and said, you know, the buck stops with me. But he's still there, and presumably nobody's to answer for this?
Well, I do want to credit Dr. Willis, who I remember he called me the night of the botched transfer, saying there are people exhibiting symptoms, even as they're on the bus waiting to get into San Quentin, and San Quentin doesn't know how to even test everyone, the 121 prisoners that were on the bus. And that is what sparked the outbreak that occurred, even after we were warning them to have a plan. I called for Kelso to be replaced. This is a court-appointed person in charge of the healthcare of our prison system. He has taken responsibility for the decision that led to that botched transfer and, of course, the death of 28 inmates at San Quentin, one staff member. And the judge, Judge Tiger, has not decided to replace Kelso. We need to look at that. We've already seen the secretary of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation retire and be replaced. But the culture, the unwillingness to plan is something that we need to look at very closely, because the pandemic will be with us for a long time to come.
Well, you've called this the worst public health disaster in state prison history, and I think that's accurate. It's there's a lot of willful negligence, really, again, engaged by the kind of language you used here that I think is appropriate. I want to bring Julie Small back, though. Julie, talk about your interview with the lawyer in the San Quentin case.
Yeah, I mean, the attorney for Von Stajic is Richard Brauker, and he's with the First District Appellate Project. And, you know, when he got called by the court to actually do a supplemental brief on this, that's when he, you know, they were able to see that there had been adequate warning about the need for lowering the population. And he's hoping that, you know, that this ruling will be a wake-up call for California's prisons to take COVID-19 seriously.
It's already killed 70 people. It's infected more than 15,000, and it keeps coming. It keeps rolling through the prisons, and it can't be wished away. We can't pretend that we're handling it. You know, the notion that the CCR was able to take care of things in San Quentin is outrageous. I mean, the virus won. It ripped through the prison and infected 3/4 of the people there. And that's going to happen virtually anywhere.
And, you know, the other point is that it is happening in other parts of the state. You know, these habeas corpus petitions by inmates have been sent to courts all over the state, but this is the first court that upheld it and said, hey, we have to look into this. This sounds like a serious problem. We got to do something about it.
And what do you suspect, Assemblyman, is being done about it at this point? You still got prison population overall, about 25% of what the capacity is supposed to be, and COVID is raging.
So CDCR likes to state that they've released tens of thousands or reduced the population of our prisons by tens of thousands, almost 30,000. But we've also at the very same time stopped intake from our county jails. And so the numbers that we're actually working with and what that decrease in population looks like, while it's good that we have done that, it doesn't show that we've been radically cohorting or releasing or moving people in a way that protects against the type of distancing that's being recommended. And we see in other prisons like Avenal, where nearly 2,900 people have become infected with COVID-19. It's not just San Quentin, it's a system-wide issue. And we've seen time and again with the 35 different prison facilities that CDCR is unwilling or incapable to have a plan to make sure that each prison is safe from COVID-19. And I understand it's almost impossible to protect against completely shutting the infection out of any prison. There are people coming and going. But what we saw at San Quentin, even after the outbreak, was that some people who you know, are incarcerated had jobs like janitors or were cooks, and they were able to move from cell block to cell block even after the outbreak occurred. We need to make sure that radical cohorting is taking place to make sure that we're able to protect against infection. And as Judge Klein said, we have to look very closely at halving the population. And he had recommended looking more closely at who should be released. There are seniors, elderly, medically vulnerable people who have spent decades behind bars. And the studies have shown that if they've been in prison for 25 years, they're physically and mentally very different people, that you can look at their, you know, cases, determine who is at risk for recidivism, and make a good case that some of these medically vulnerable could be found a home somewhere else where they could be adequately sheltered and protected from COVID-19.
Well, if you would like to join us in this discussion, if you have questions or comments, we invite you to do that now. You can do it by phoning us at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We do want to hear from you, so please feel free to join us now at 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Julie Small with us, criminal justice and immigration reporter for KQED, and Mark Levine, assembly member for District 10, which covers Marin and Sonoma counties. And a listener writes, I don't understand why transferring inmates is a solution. Wasn't San Quentin virus-free until inmates were transferred in? What prisons in California are not overcrowded? And indeed, Julie, let me go to you on this. San Quentin was virus-free before the transfer. You want to respond to that, listener?
Right. And that is one of the big concerns. And I think that's why attorneys and advocates for inmates have been pushing more for these releases than trying to, you know, it's a Rubik's cube. Whenever corrections has to move anybody anywhere, they have to make sure they've got space somewhere else. They have to transport them. And yeah, every time you transport or transfer someone, you raise all kinds of risks. And they're still, you know, we don't know how great the protocols are in terms of, are they going to test right before they leave this time instead of, you know, 2 weeks before they left, when in the case with San Quentin. And I think that's, one of the things that this, the order says, the San Quentin release order says that if the state can't manage to reduce the population at San Quentin, they're ordered to release inmates over age 60 who've served at least 25 years of their sentences and are eligible for parole. I think the typical response that we'll see from CDCR is that they're gonna look for the low hanging fruit. They're gonna do the least, you know. It's sensitive when you release anyone early, especially somebody who has, you know, had committed a violent crime. But, you know, here we have judges saying this has gotten so bad that you have to release people even who had violent crimes in their past if they've served, you know, at least 25 years of their sentences.
It still brings up a question about public safety. And Mark Levine, let me go to you on this, because there is concern about convicts with serious violent offense being released. About 30%, in fact, the convicts are serving a life sentence.
It's important to look at every incarcerated person as an individual, determine, you know, what was that crime? How is justice served? What is their rehabilitative path? How many decades have they been there? What is their physical and medical condition? All of that needs to be considered. But we also know that public health officers have gotten us and gotten the Bay Area to where we are today, where, you know, we have lower rates of infection compared to other parts of our country. And yet within the walls of our prison system, public health officers have no sway at all. And CDCR does not have a public health officer that helps to make decisions or has decision-making authority to protect public health within those prison walls. And that needs to change within the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. That will help guide us through the second wave of the pandemic as it comes, just as it has guided our communities outside the prison walls.
All right, we've got seconds left, but I want to get a caller on. Barbara, go ahead, please, quickly, if you could.
I'm wondering if the infection within San Quentin endangers the civilians outside the prison in areas like Larkspur.
Response from you, Mark Levine?
Certainly, the concern for hospitalization is the one of the leading concerns we have, because whether it's Marin Health Medical Center, Kaiser and Terra, Novato Community Hospital, there's limited bed capacity. And while they've shut down the alternate care site at San Quentin, there's nowhere really for people to go when they need help like a ventilator and a hospital bed. And so there's no plan in the future as to how quickly they can, you know, create these alternate care sites again, and whether those rates of community spread will compete with the rates of prison infection, where that limits our hospital's abilities to respond.
Well, we'll leave it there. And many thanks to you, Mark Levine, for joining us. Mark Levine, again, is Assembly Member for District 10. And thanks to Julie Small, who is a criminal justice and immigration reporter for KQED. And thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. And another hour of Forum up ahead with Mina Kim. Thank you for being a part of this hour. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, please stay safe. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.